So welcome, everybody. I'm Nicole LeBlanc, Director of Markets and Tariff at the ISO. I'm going to give a short introduction before turning it over to the team today. Murray Natishan, Brendan Jewett, and Tan are all familiar faces in the sub-hourly settlement engagement, along with Jen Vollmer, our comms advisor. And they're going to be taking you through the material and answering your questions and taking your input today. Just a quick reminder, if you want to go to the next slide, Murray, that the ISO is doing an audio recording of this engagement. And so we will, through that recording, be gathering some of your personal information, and through the FOIP Act, that information may need to be disclosed in the future. So if you have any concerns with that, please make sure to reach out and let us know. And jumping right into the next slide, Murray. So today we're here presenting information information that an analysis that we've been working on since our last session in April, and presenting our recommendation, our draft recommendation around not moving forward with sub-hourly settlement at this point in time, and really wanting to share with you the information that we've gathered from stakeholders over the past few months on costs related to implementation and the analysis that we've done around benefits, and then our kind of comparison of those and the overall recommendation that indicates that while theoretically sub-hourly settlement would likely drive more efficient price fidelity signals for the market, when we look at the quantitative benefits that we've estimated, the costs look to outweigh those benefits. And so considering where the world that we're operating in right now and the need for cost management and market stability, when we trade that off against long-term market efficiency in this particular situation, it seems like not an initiative to move forward with right now. But through the conversations that we've had and the information that we've gathered, we continue to hear the importance or the value to certain consumers of being able to have more direct price signals in response to incent their behavior more directly. And so we have identified a possible option that's of smaller scope, but may unlock some of the benefits for the market for some of the load players. And we'll talk about that at the end of the session around a payment for load on the margin option that looks a lot like payment to suppliers on the margin. And we really appreciate you coming. There's what are we up to now? We're up to 65 participants, and we appreciate all of you, your continued involvement in this engagement. Some of you, we were reaching out over the summer months to gather some more specific cost information, and we appreciate the time and efforts that it took for you to prepare that, and it's an important component of our draft recommendation that we're presenting here today. And throughout all of this engagement, we've been operating under the ISO's new stakeholder engagement framework. And we hope that you're seeing some shifts in how we approach this engagement, of that we're using your time effectively, getting you the information that you need in a timely manner to be able to be prepared to provide input where we're requesting it, and that we're being clear around the process that we're running and the areas and the input that we're seeking. So today and through the agenda, you'll see that we're going to catch up from where we left off in April, and share with you information that we've gathered since then on costs for implementation of sub-hourly settlement in the options that we'd left off with in April, and also the analysis that we've done to quantify the benefits. And through the comment matrix that we posted up, you'll see where we're seeking input on those things. So we're looking to see if you think we've kind of if the costs that we've characterized seem reasonable to you, or if we've missed any benefits in a quantification, and then pulling that together into the recommendation and looking to see if you have any further thoughts that you want to share with us that, that may influence the finalization of the recommendation. And also continued feedback on how we can improve our engagement processes. And then closing off the day with really talking through the payment for load on the margin, presenting the options that we think has some merit, but then have a big ask to consumers to understand, is there value in it for them? Because it's only something that we think we should put effort in and take forward if there's some merit to it for the parties that it would impact. And so just before I hand it over to Murray, Jen Vollmer is going to take us through, although many of you are already experts at this, just the reminder of how we're running the Zoom sessions and the way we're engaging using Zoom as a tool.
Thanks, Nicole. So I know you guys are all very familiar with Zoom, but just a quick reminder. So there's a few people on the phone, but if you're having any trouble connecting or joining the session, feel free to just send an email to stakeholder.relations@iso.ca and I can try to support you that way. And a reminder, we will be, as Nicole said, we're recording the audio for this session and that will be posted to the initiative page within 3 business days. So if you guys need to check back or review, that will all be available on the initiative page shortly. So as you're all familiar, you only see the ISO panelists for this session, your video is off and you're muted. But at any time, if you have questions during the Q&A session or Q&A portion, please raise your hand. You have that functionality at the bottom of your screen. And I'll come over and unmute you and you can ask your question to the panelists. The alternative is to type in a question in the written Q&A box and I will read those aloud for the panelists. We do ask that for the raise hand function that you announce or introduce yourself in your organization, just so we can all be clear on that. And for the folks on the phone line, *9 is to raise your hand and *6 is to unmute. And yeah, I think that's about it. So back to you, Murray.
Okay, great. Thanks, Nicole and Jen. So as we move forward through today, it'll be Tan and Brendan and I that cover the rest of the material with you. Thanks again for joining us. We thought it would make sense to talk about the objectives of that we were looking to achieve as we initiated this sub-hourly settlement stakeholder engagement process. And one of them was we wanted to ensure that we could determine if there was value in moving forward with some sort of a shorter settlement interval. And if there was value, if we could assess what that value was. We did want to understand the expected benefits to price fidelity and flexibility. And I think we'll go through that material and provide you kind of our final analysis. Brendan will take you through that this morning. We did want to understand if we were to move forward with the initiative, what the costs would be to loads and generators. And Tan is going to walk you through that information just after I'm done speaking. We did want to look at also the implementation costs for the ISO and those market participants. That's something Tan's going to do. And then, you know, to the extent that we were moving forward, what would be the timing required for a transition to a sub-hourly settlement interval? We didn't really assess that through this process because we're really not suggesting that we move forward with the initiative. But I think that it's good to review what the objectives of the session were or the initiative were, and I think that we've met those. And if you feel otherwise, if you want to let us know either through the session or through the stakeholder comments, that would be fine. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to talk a little bit about a short review of where we left off session 2. It seems like it's been quite a while since we last got together and talked about this. So we'll do a quick review of what are the things that we were focusing on subsequent to that session. We'll review some of the comments that we received from stakeholders, and then we'll also talk about the one-on-one discussions. We had a number of those with some of the market participants, and we'll give you some summary of the discussions that we had with them. So in session 2, we were considering what would be appropriate intervals for a sub-hourly settlement initiative if we were to change from our current hourly settlement process? We really looked at a couple of alternatives. Really, we had a 15-minute settlement interval, and we also had a 5-minute settlement interval. We had an alternative where we would start at 15 and eventually transition into 5, and where we left the session to, and we also got some additional information that reinforced that kind of position after the session 2 was that we would pursue the 15-minute settlement option exclusively. There was some of the reasons that we had identified at that time was that all of the existing interval meters are currently set at 15 minutes. If we were to move to 5 minutes, all of the interval meters, whether they're for generation or load, would need to be recalibrated and recertified, and increasing the costs quite substantially. Brendan will also talk a little bit about some of the static benefits that we identified between the 5-minute and the 15-minute interval option, and the benefits that he'll discuss just further reinforce that it would make most sense to explore this on a 15-minute settlement interval initially anyways. We also talked about at the last session, we talked about how market participants would participate in a shorter settlement interval. And we were looking at mandatory participation requirements for generation, mandatory for all loads, possibly just mandatory participation for those loads and generators that were on interval meters, or if it could be voluntary for all. We'll go through some of the stakeholder responses that we received, but the voluntary for all was largely discounted by the ISO and also by market participants. And our focus really was on then looking at, should it be mandatory for all loads and generation, or would it just be for interval meters and loads? I'm sorry, interval metered loads and generation, and then hourly for the others. And we'll talk in the following slides that I deliver, we'll talk a little bit about some of the considerations that we got from the load settlement agents, and kind of then ultimately where our focus was as we went through our work. We received comments from the stakeholders after the second session regarding the interval duration and the participation. Most of the stakeholders that we received comments for preferred the 15-minute settlement intervals for the reasons largely that I explained in the previous slide, is that those existing interval meters are set to the 15-minute time period. There was, of course, there's always going to be some other opinions. There was people that did prefer the hourly settlement interval that we are currently using, and there was one entity that expressed the preference for a 5-minute settlement interval, just thinking that it would provide enhanced price fidelity and better flexibility. Participation, most of the stakeholders were suggesting that participation should be something that would be applicable to all market participants, that it should be the same rules for all market participants across the market. There was, of course, a couple that thought intervals, that participation only for those on interval meters would be appropriate. But the preference from most people was for kind of common participation for everybody. There were some, we had some questions around how we would actually implement a sub-hourly settlement processes around the way that offers would be submitted and the way that dispatch would be provided. As far as changes to the way that offers would be submitted, whether the offers should change from the current hourly format to something that is more granular, maybe down to 15 minutes, if that was the interval that we had selected for the shorter interval. Most respondents thought that we could continue to make offers on an hourly basis, and that would be fine in a shorter settlement interval. As far as dispatch goes, most participants also thought that the ISO could continue with the current approach of dispatching when required to meet changes in generation load, or kind of that ad hoc dispatch approach that's currently used, and that changes to align the dispatch with the settlement interval weren't required. There were some participants that expressed concern that restricting the dispatch to align with the settlement interval could increase costs, and specifically there was concern about increasing regulating reserves that may need to be carried to balance the system between the settlement interval dispatches. And we also had some thoughts around the consultation continuation. There was a bit of a mixed outlook. Most market participants did prefer to delay the consultation due to the economic conditions and the other activities that the ISO had, and they also thought that further analysis was required before the decision could be made. So one of the things that we will be presenting today is kind of our final and what we think is the complete analysis of the efficiency benefits of the sub-hourly settlement interval. I think that allows us to make the recommendation that we've been able to make with a lot more certainty. We certainly did need to have a better understanding of what the costs that would be applicable to market participants if we did move forward with the initiative. And I think we've got the information through our one-on-one consultation sessions that we did have that allow us to make a good and a complete recommendation with all the information that we need to make a good decision. There were some participants that did want the consultation to continue. Mostly, they were the loads that have generally been supportive of the initiative, believing that there is benefits for their business if the sub-hourly settlement initiative was to progress. So with that, this kind of leads into the work that Tan will be presenting at the end of the session as far as payment for loads on the margin, which is something akin to payment for suppliers on the margin. And then the last slide for me before I pass it over to Tan to talk about some of the cost summaries is we did have a number of one-on-one meetings subsequent to the session two engagement that we had. We felt that we really needed to better understand the costs that would be incurred by industry if we were to move forward with the sub-hourly settlement initiative. So we've had a number of sessions. In many cases, we've had a couple of sessions with people that you see on this screen, but we did have sessions directly targeted to load settlement agents, and you can see the individual entities that we did meet with. And we asked them questions around their preference, in the applicability slide that I went through earlier. We asked questions to the LSAs regarding whether there would be a preference for, some of the loads to settle on an hourly basis or on a shorter settlement interval, or all of the loads to settle on a shorter settlement interval. The LSA preference was for all of the loads to be settled with a shorter settlement interval. There would be less complications associated with that kind of approach, less system changes that would be required. If everybody was settled in the same manner, there would be the profiling of the cumulative meters, the cumulative meter customers that would need to happen, but this was certainly the preference for the LSA entities. All of these groups noted that there would be pretty significant IT changes that would need to be required to their system to allow settlement on a shorter duration. And they also cautioned us to ensure that we were going, with whatever changes that the ISO did implement, that they'd be aligned with the AUC metering standards. We had a number of discussions with retailers. You can see the retailers that we largely focused. There are a number of retailers in the province, but we largely focused on the larger entities. And the feedback that we got from the retailers was that there would generally be a few years, or it would be easier to implement a shorter settlement interval if we provided a few years of lead time for the retailers to minimize the impacts of the change. There would be changes, just like the LSAs, there would be significant changes required to the retailers' IT systems and the way that they were settling their customer billing. There would also be, on top of the IT changes, there would also be contractual changes that they would need to implement to their customers that would reflect the shorter settlement interval. Some of the retailers also noted that there could possibly be price changes that they would be putting through to their customers to reflect either increased or decreased costs associated with maybe fixed price contracts that they've offered to their customers. So the feedback from them was that the longer the lead time that could be provided, the better. That would allow existing contracts to roll off and new contracts to have the appropriate shorter settlement interval language and pricing reflected in them. The retailers also noted that in order to allow their customers to participate, their customers largely being the kind of commercial and residential customer base to participate, there would need to be smart meters installed that would allow those customers to be able to see the prices and respond to prices and to have their billing reflect their time of use, the time of use, and be billed according to price in effect when they were consuming. So that kind of rounds up the comments we received from the retailers. And then we did meet with a number of the larger industrial loads in the province or their associations. And the feedback that we've received from them is that loads would generally be more price responsive under a shorter settlement interval. And in the event that we couldn't proceed with a shorter settlement interval initiative, if there would be another way to provide a bit more price certainty than what they currently get, as far as the price paid for the energy consumed. And as I've said, Tan will talk about one of the alternatives that we'd like to have some further discussions with the stakeholder groups about when we talk about the payment for loads on the margin at the back end of this presentation. So with that, I'm going to pass it over to Tan. Tan's going to talk about the cost estimates. I've talked a little bit here about the costs that both the LSAs and the retailers have provided. Tan's going to go through that in more detail. And then after Tan is done, Brendan is going to come in and talk about the further work that we've done on the efficiency benefits of a shorter settlement interval. I'll come back in after that, talk about the kind of the combined cost benefits and the recommendation, and then we'll have a break at some point through the session as well. So Tan, I'm going to pass it over to you to talk about the cost estimates.
Thanks, Murray. So with the cost estimates, we met with a whole bunch of people, like Murray said, with the loads retailers, and we also gathered the information from the written comments, so from the comment matrix, and any of the cost surveys that we sent out. So that's all amalgamated into the numbers here that you see. We did amalgamate and aggregate everything, and the reason for that was so that some of the numbers are commercially sensitive, and so we wanted to ensure that they weren't attributable to any entity out there or individual entity out there. Also, before I start going into the individual categories, we did do it when we were going out to ask for these cost estimates, we did ask them from a very high level so that we would understand the magnitude of costs. So basically a range and to understand if it's something that could be moved, that the consultation could be moved forward on. We didn't ask very detailed numbers down to like the pennies or anything like that, because it was a lot of effort to get, and we did hear from some stakeholders that would take way too long to provide. So then we needed some number that was reasonable within a reasonable time frame. So one of the other reasons why we wanted a high level cost was also the options, the individual options for how like a sub-hourly settlement would be implemented weren't actually worked out yet, because that would have been worked out in a later phase. So then thus we would getting people to provide very detailed information on that wasn't very fair. So we understood that there was going to be a little bit of a range there so that they could reflect some of those implementation options from their perspective. And I just want to say that we did get a lot of information from everybody, and the information that we have been aggregated into all these numbers. However, we didn't get information from absolutely like all loads, all generators, or all retailers. As Marie mentioned, we did focus on some of the larger ones, or the people who have actually responded to us. We've included those. And so the cost estimates here could be seen as on the lower end, because if everybody were to respond and we were to aggregate all those numbers, the cost could go up by a little bit. And I just wanted to thank everybody also but who have responded to all our costs and everything, especially over the summer and all the hard work you've done to provide us all that information. My costs, what I'm going to be presenting from the cost estimates is actually focused on only one option. Marie mentioned the different two options that we looked at. So just a quick refresher. Option one was that if we were implementing sub-hourly for everyone, that's the cost estimate that I'll be providing. The reason for that is the cost estimate for if we were to allow some optionality, for example, the interval meter for sub-hourly on an interval meter basis, but then cumulative meters would be settled on hourly. That created a lot of complexity and actually added to a lot of the costs. So I'm not going to present those because those costs are even higher than the numbers I'm going to be presenting today. Okay, so with that, I'm going to talk about the load settlement agents. So any of the numbers in these ones are going to be reflected as from an individual basis. So when I quote like 500 to 5 million, that's individually somebody provided some, that's the range for each individual company that provided it. So to start off with, on slide 13, I'm speaking about load settlement agent. So the cost estimate ranged from 500K to 5 million, and that's the one-time cost. And then there were 500,000 of ongoing costs that were provided there. The wide range of estimates reflected the differences in participant systems and options that could be implemented. And I spoke a little bit about that earlier. So I looked at it from three different categories. So there's the metering, the IT, and the data storage. So with the metering category for the LSAs, they were low cost for most. One participant did anticipate some significant changes with their meter replacement as one option for them to do. So then they did provide a higher range and a lower range there. The majority of participants believed that the existing meters were sufficient and that they would be able to profile on a 15-minute basis. So that's why the costs were low from the metering perspective. From an IT system perspective, the costs were at a medium range. Most participants believed that the systems had the ability to accommodate the sub-hourly settlement intervals. However, it hasn't been tested, so they would have to do rigorous testing and then to see if it would perform as expected, and they might have to actually do some tweaks and some IT changes to actually be able to perform as needed. So that's where the majority of the costs were for the LSAs. And then their data storage, some weren't able to actually provide a specific number, but they did realize that there would be four times the amount of data that would need to be stored. So there could be an increase in data storage depending on the data system and how everything was stored there. So to the next page. Thank you, Marie. The next person I'm going to focus on is the retailers. The cost from the retailers range from 1 million to 9 million with about 5 million of ongoing costs. Once again, everybody's system was vastly different, so then the cost range is quite wide, as you can see there. The metering with minimal costs, because retailers don't own their own meters, so there's hardly any costs associated with that. With the IT system, once again, the cost is very high there, and that's because there would be changes to billing and settlement systems, and I believe anytime that you touch any billings and settlement system, the costs are quite significant. There's also changes to not only the billing and IT system, but other internal systems that they would have to look at associated with sub-hourly. So profiling, forecasting, price models, and all of that. So that cost was also associated there. The third category was the data storage. Lower costs there, but there would still be an increase in cost, but the actual implementation would actually provide those details of what the actual cost would be. So we know it's low, but we don't know how much. The last category is other. They did mention that the cost could be reduced somewhat if the timing of the implementation aligned with future contract expiry. Marie mentioned that a little bit earlier there. So basically, if a contract was of 3 years, they would require that type of lead time so that there would be minimal cost in change in law. Okay, we did have some discussions with Lodes, and they estimated that the cost to move was under $50,000 to move to 15-minute settlement. Metering costs were minimal. IT system costs were minimal also, because there might be some settlement system changes, but they expect it to be minimal because it's more of a billing cost to them. So not as significant of an IT change there. And then with data storage, it was also be minimal. With generation, there was quite a range of estimates also. It ranged anywhere from minimal to about $4 million on the top end. The metering costs were minimal because, as Marie mentioned earlier, all existing generators are already on a 15-minute interval meter, and thus no changes would be required there. With the IT system, it'd be a medium cost. The settlement system and other internal systems would require changes, which is the bulk of the cost estimates that they provided to us. And then data storage would be a low cost because there would be an increase, once again, because it'd be four times the amount, but the actual estimates they weren't able to provide. We also had comments from other entities like the meter data managers. They did say that the cost estimates would be minimal, especially if implementation of sub-hourly actually aligned with when the meters were replaced. So thus that would cut down on meter replacement costs. And then I wanted to note that not all companies were able to provide estimates. Some said that they required 6 to 12 months to develop some of the estimates that we were asking. So with these, none of the costs were actually summarized in our data. And then with the ISO, we did do a cost estimate, and it ranged from about $1.5 million to $3 million. And that depends on the complexity of the option chosen. Like I said, there's still a whole bunch of implementation details that haven't been worked out. And so that reflected the range there for us. From a metering perspective, we don't own any meters, and so it's not applicable for the cost for us there. And then with the IT system, it was a medium cost because there were changes required to approximately 5 market tools. So there was a lot of interconnection between all those tools that we would have to work out. And then the last category is the data storage, and that was low. We knew that the storage would need to increase, but depending on how it was increased and what was needed to be done, we didn't actually have that exact number yet. So in the next two slides, what I'm going to do is I'm going to summarize all the costs from an overall cost perspective, either by system or through the different categories. And in here, you see that there's a range that I've looked at, like a one-time cost and for a low range and a high range for the one-time cost. Some of the information, like the data storage and others, have the exact same range number. Left 2.9, 3.1 million there. The reason why I didn't provide a range was that people gave one number and they said that there would be some differences around them, but they didn't actually quantify what the differences would be for low range and high range. So I just used the one number that they provided in the chart there. So looking at from a whole overall system perspective, the total costs range anywhere from $31 million to approximately 45 million from the high range, and that's the one-time cost. And like I said, the ranges are really dependent on the implementation options, which we didn't define yet. In that chart also, I had an incremental ongoing cost, and some people provided some of those to us, and that's approximately $6 million. As you can see, the IT system costs were actually the majority of the cost that was submitted to us. So anywhere from the $25 to $35 million cost there. And then people did provide costs in other categories, and those costs included anything from contract renegotiations, customer education, and any other internal support systems that wasn't quite relevant to SubHourly but needed to be changed due to it also. Okay, now on slide 20 for those people on the phone. In this chart, I amalgamated everything by participants. So generators and loads were lumped together just due to the sheer numbers of comments that we received there, so that we could ensure that everything was not attributable to any individual entity. Once again, as you can see, the total is the same, the $30 to $45 million. In here, retailers did have the highest implementation costs, and I believe that's due to if they had to change or to redo the whole billing system. I believe that's what the cost is associated with that. And then with the ISO, our costs were pretty in line with what the individual LSE's costs were, so about the $1.5 to $2-3 million range. And I think I'm done with my session. So just going to be opening it up for questions then, Murray?
Yeah, let's open it up for questions. Jen, if you've got any questions, stakeholders related to either the information I talked about or the cost information Tan presented, we've got some time that we can take to answer those.
Yeah, no raised hands right now. There was a Q&A just asking about the presentation slides, and I responded to that. And just so everyone knows, that this presentation has been posted on the initiative webpage for SubHourly Settlement, and that was there. It's been there for a week, so that's all available for you. We do have one raised hand though, so I'll go over there. Doug, if you can unmute.
Can I just remind people when they do, before you ask your question, just state your full name and the company that you're working with?
Yeah, it's Doug Sullivan. I'm with In Situ Power, just representing Alberta Newsprint, West Fraser. Just had a question about, I mean, it's fairly predictable, right, that the costs for retailers and load settlement agents would be higher because of the scale of the systems that they're changing. Why would we not limit the load that gets settled? I mean, I can see the generators would need to be part of it, but why wouldn't we limit the load to be settled under a sub-hourly settlement to something more like self-retailers only, who would be, you know, only dealing with their own plants and would have minimal IT costs? You considered that?
So we did look at that as an option for different people to participate into the market there in that manner. However, from a system perspective, from the ISO side, the cost really did become very, very expensive, and it became very, very complex just because of providing optionality. You would have to actually do everything, because you would still have to settle people from an hourly perspective, and then you would have to settle people from a 15-minute perspective. So in essence, we were duplicating the settlement system on our end, and then when people switch from deciding that they wanted to do 15 versus hourly, that also created complications. So we did review that at the very beginning, but it became very complex and very expensive.
Would your mind change, Tan, if it were limited to transmission connected self-retailers solely?
We, like I said, we looked at it very early on, and it became super expensive. So they said that it was better to look at the other options. So I don't think it would. I could go back and look at the numbers again, but I don't think it would change our minds.
Thanks, Doug.
Okay, thank
does
you.
That answer your questions or anything follow up? I think we're good there. One more raised hand here. Dwayne, if you can unmute on your side.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yep. Good morning. Dwayne Osprey with Dow Chemical. A lot of these estimates seem to have been prefaced or been qualified with could be reduced if we're timed with a future upgrade of meters, infrastructure, people, you know, all that kind of stuff, right? Would the ASO consider a framework to move to shorter settlement that would guide all the different participants in the province to prepare for that in some kind of time frame, whether it be 3, 5, 7 years? And then there the cost of one time the shock would be less because those participants would be replacing their systems anyway.
Are you on mute?
I think that's a good question, Dwayne, and I'll address that in some of my summary slides near the end. But we do think that the cost could be minimized if the initiative was combined with some other you know, changes that are not yet identified changes. You know, it may be a ways out, but I know the AC is suggesting changes to all bi-directional interval meters in the 20 somewhere around 2040, and that would kind of certainly, you know, align with when these changes could be implemented. But to the extent that we see some other system changes that might be required or kind of market changes that might be required at that point, I think we could maybe provide some guidance for kind of heads up on changes to when this bi-early settlement interval might occur. But right now we just weren't really able to see the benefits outweighing the costs at the current time.
I recognize that. Thank you. I would recommend or urge the ISO to consider a move forward framework or guidance. Otherwise, when participants are upgrading their systems, they're going to say, no, the ASO said no to this in 2020, so we don't have to worry about it now in 2024. And then in 2029, we're having the same discussion again. So anyway, I'll leave it. Thank you.
All right. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in my kind of my future slides as well, Dwayne.
Thanks, Dwayne. I don't see any more raised hands here. But we do have a couple written Q&A if you want to jump over there.
Jeff, so Dan, see those? And I don't really want to make changes while I'm showing it. You maybe read the questions out.
Of course, yeah. So we have our first one showing up here from Richard Penn. We had an upvote, but Richard's question was, did you go back and ask why the retailer costs were so high when the LSA costs, who do the heavy lifting, aren't?
Okay, so let me answer that question. We do believe that all the costs that were provided to us were reasonable and within the magnitude that we were expecting. The retailer's costs were quite high because of their complexity of the billing system. So you can't say that one versus the other is lifting something heavier or not. So some of the retailers would actually have to go back and rewrite the whole billing and settlement system. And that's what the high cost would be. As I mentioned earlier, the LSAs had some of the costs already, apologize, not cost, but some of the functionalities of a sub-hourly settlement already written into the settlement and billing system. And so thus, they would just have to do a lot of testing to ensure that that would actually work and function as what they expected. And so that's why the costs were a little bit lower there.
Perfect. Thank you, Tim. Okay, and then we have a question from Surinda. How have other jurisdictions justified the switch over to sub-hourly settlement?
The ones that have actually switched over are actually mandated by FERC. So it wasn't something that they did on an individual basis, but FERC came out and said, everybody go move to a sub-hourly settlement. So thus, they didn't have to justify that cost.
Perfect. Thank you, Tan. And then Nicole, your question about the link for the page, yes, I can send that over to you. If you're on the website, it is under stakeholder engagement, and then ISO initiatives, and then sub-hourly settlement. But I can also email you the link to that as well. Then there's one more question here from Richard Penn. Why would the retailer have to rewrite their systems if they didn't change their retail contracts?
I think that would be a question to the retailers themselves, but what they've indicated to us is if they had to set on a sub-hourly basis from the information that they would have to pull in, then they would actually have to rewrite the system to reflect that. So that would be a cost. And they would, I'm assuming that the contracts would change later on if we do move to a 15-minute settlement to reflect that. But I'm not too sure if I understood exactly what Richard meant, but hopefully that answers the question.
Yeah, let us know if you have
any help there. I was going to add a little bit to that one, Jen. I think that and I agree that the contracts at some point would need to change if there were existing. What we had heard from them, if there were existing contracts that kind of spanned the duration of the hourly interval to the shorter settlement interval, those contracts would need to be adjusted. There would be some ongoing, like a one-time cost associated with rewriting any contracts that commenced subsequent to the shorter settlement interval commencing. During the period where there's, you know, the transition from the shorter settlement or from the hourly settlement to the shorter settlement interval did occur, there would still be costs to the retailers associated with rewriting their systems to now account or to settle on that 15-minute settlement interval rather than the hourly that they had right now. So there was, from our discussions, there was pretty significant costs for them, kind of. Regardless of when the change did occur, the more lead time that was provided would reduce some of those costs, but there would still be costs associated with the change.
Perfect, thanks, Marie. So I think that's it for questions that I see right now, and there's no other raised hands.
Why don't we, Tan, we're only at 9:50, I'd suggest that we go ahead with Brendan's piece and then we can have a break. Rather than having a break now, let's go through the benefits section of the presentation and then we can have a short break after Brendan has done his piece.
All right, thanks, Murray. So having gone through the costs, this next section is going to go through some of the benefits and the methods we used to estimate those and what the results were that we found. So starting on slide 24 here, there's two types of benefits that we're going to be estimating here, or at least discussing. The first is what we've referred to in the past as static benefits, or benefits that we observe in real time in the market. And then there's also dynamic benefits, or benefits that take a longer time in order to realize and for the market to be able to respond and adjust to the change that we've made. And so typically in these types of problems, it's sort of the norm that these static benefits that occur in real time are much easier to estimate, they're easier to quantify, whereas the dynamic benefits, they are inherently an expectation about what will happen in the future. And so it's much more difficult to quantify or nail down those benefits. And so instead they rely more on the theory and principle to envision what those benefits might be. So firstly, we're going to look through the model that was put together to estimate some of these static benefits. So previously, I believe we shared this in session two, I want to say. We did a little bit of work estimating what the financial impact would be to different types of market participants from sub-hourly settlement. And so the way that this analysis was conducted was simply just averaging our system marginal prices over a sub-hourly interval rather than an hourly interval. And so what that means is there were no behavioral changes or marginal price adjustments that were allowed as a result of sub-hourly settlement. And so you can think of this previous analysis that we showed being sort of how the pie is divided, or how the money in the market was divided between different participants and how that might change. And while we think that that was valuable to look at, we also want to understand what's the benefit from the market as a whole that we might expect from sub-hourly settlement. And so what this model does is it measures changes in static efficiency by allowing loads to respond to this sub-hourly interval. And so that means that we will model their response if they were exposed to prices under a sub-hourly interval compared to an hourly interval. And so what that analysis achieves is seeing how the size of the pie, or the total amount of wealth or welfare in the market, it would be expected to change from sub-hourly settlement. And so I mentioned that we're measuring static efficiency. And so the type of static efficiency that we think would be most impacted by sub-hourly settlement, and the type that we estimate in this model, is called allocative efficiency. And so in essence, what that means is we're looking at how close the clearing price and quantity in the market are to what we believe the true underlying supply and demand equilibrium is going to be. And so in other words, how well the market has been able to reflect that supply and demand equilibrium underlying it. And so the hypothesis that we have going into this analysis was that if we settle on a sub-hourly basis, it means that market prices would better reflect what the supply and demand fundamentals are at a given point in time. And we'd expect that to result in an enhancement of static efficiency. So here's just a graphical depiction of where we might see an enhancement in static efficiency. And so just to walk through this a little bit, we have our quantity, our megawatts on the x-axis, and our market price on the y-axis. We have an upward sloping supply curve that gets more steep as we go along, which is typical of the merit orders that we see. And we have a downward sloping demand curve that in this case represents the responsiveness of demand. And we can see that we have a price and quantity labeled P60, Q60, and we can say that that may be where the pool price was at this particular moment in time. And do note that the supply and demand curves, this is really a moment in time concept. So what that means is that the hourly pool price may not reflect what the supply and demand are suggesting at a given instant in time. And so in this figure, we have a pool price that's higher than where supply and demand intersect. As a result, we have slightly less quantity being consumed in the market than what we would expect. And so if we were to allow the market to instead clear at this instantaneous supply and demand, we would move to the equilibrium where we see the sub-hourly price labeled PSH and the sub-hourly quantity. And so the efficiency that we measure in this model is the increase in overall surplus as a result of this change, which is represented by areas A and B here. And so area A is the increase in allocative efficiency that we think would be attributed to loads. And area B in this figure is the increase in allocative efficiency that we think would be attributed to generators. We also have this large area C, and that represents a transfer. So that's just welfare or money being transferred from one side of the market to the other. In this instance, because the price is going down, it's a transfer from generators to loads. But because that's a transfer, again, we're sort of looking at the size of the pie in this analysis. It means the size of the pie hasn't changed by that area C, but rather we're just looking at areas A and B in this instant to see how the overall welfare may be improving. All right, so in order to do this analysis on slide 29, we did have that demand curve in the previous figure, and so we need a way to estimate that demand curve. And so to model that response from loads, we want to capture that in the demand curve that we use. And so we use a demand curve that we had also used in the past to measure static efficiency when we did our market power report that we provided to the Minister of Energy. And so this demand curve is meant to reflect the willingness to pay for electricity of the price responsive loads that we observe in the market. And so if we assume that generally speaking, price responsive loads would consume electricity when it's profitable for them to consume electricity, that would mean that within their production, or within their consumption rather, that you can observe in the market, the value of their production would be embedded within that consumption pattern that we observe. So on slide 30, we can see the graphical representation of this demand curve that we constructed. And so the blue dots are all of the observed points where the identified price responsive loads were consuming at different price levels. And then we use a regression technique in order to come up with effectively what the average consumption would be expected from these loads at each price level. And so that gives us a way to predict, if we see price at a given level, what we might expect an average response to be from these price responsive loads. And so we want to be upfront about some of the limitations of the way that demand is modeled here. So we're aware that the actual way that loads behave and their actual consumption pattern is going to be more sophisticated than what you'll be able to get just out of a simple relationship between price and quantity. And with that, what we mean by that is that price responsive loads, we know that when they're actually consuming, they perform a more complex optimization of their consumption. And that includes things like their forward-looking expectation of the market, as well as any constraints on their operations for things like min run time or their responsive capability. And so we also are assuming here that loads are able to react the same way to sub-hourly prices that we've observed them reacting to hourly prices in the past. And the validity of that assumption will vary, I think, based on the interval that we're looking at. As the interval gets longer, it's more likely that they'll be able to respond in the same way. And this demand curve was also built or calibrated on all of these points that we observed in the previous figure that were taken from 2013 to 2018. And so what that means is that the demand curve is static within this time. And so if there is noticeable changes in demand between those years, it wouldn't necessarily be reflected. And also that when we're just looking at historical behavior in general, it may not necessarily be reflective of how these loads would behave in the future. And then the final point that I want to touch on is that there are other exogenous demand factors, such as LSSI arming, as well as avoidance of coincident peak charges through the tariff. And there is a way that the model partially addresses those factors, but we'll talk more about that in a following slide. So on slide 32, we've already established our demand curve. And so we also need a supply curve in order to find the efficient market equilibrium. And so the merit order that we observe, or the offers that we receive from generators, are not always a true reflection of the supply curve at that time. And what I mean by that is that the supply curve, the concept of a supply curve, fundamentally represents the perfect competitive outcome, or in other words, the marginal cost of production. And because generators are permitted to economically withhold their energy, it means that they may submit offers that are higher than their marginal cost. And so the distinction here is that we use the merit order comprised of offers that we receive from generators to actually determine where the market's going to clear, where that market equilibrium will be. And then we have this supply curve and the demand curve that are used to determine where the perfectly efficient equilibrium would be. And we can compare what this market equilibrium was to what the perfectly efficient equilibrium would have been. And so the way that we estimate the supply curve, similarly, it was estimated in a manner that was consistent with our previous analysis, including the market power mitigation advice. And so we estimate marginal cost with several components, including things such as the cost of fuel, the cost of carbon compliance, as well as variable operations and maintenance costs. So I previously mentioned these exogenous demand factors, and by exogenous, I mean that they're not explicitly included in the model. So things like LSSI and coincident peak. And so when we observe these factors, it typically means that there is an outlier in our observed demand, meaning that the demand we observe is different from what we would have otherwise expected as an average response at that price level. And so what that causes is the model to sometimes predict too large of a change in demand than what we'd reasonably expect given the actual circumstances at that time. And so the model takes into account when our observed demand is different from what our expected average demand was. And so the actual logic coded into the model for how it will process that will vary a bit depending on the scenario, the relative ordering of marginal cost, of demand, of the SMP, of the pool price, all these things. But generally speaking, as an example, if we observe that demand was lower than usual, so you could think that perhaps it's a suspected coincident peak interval, and so we observe that demand is already off, it means that further decreases in demand due to a high SMP would be smaller than what we would expect if demand was at an average level. And what that means is it just prevents the model from turning off a generator that is already off, which would therefore result in a larger response than what we would actually realistically expect at that time. And so this is not as accurate as if we had explicitly modeled the way that these loads individually respond to things like LSSI arming and coincident peak, but it does partially address the outliers that we observe from these factors. So there are two scenarios that we run this model on. One is on a 15-minute settlement interval. The other is a 5-minute settlement interval. And we use the years 2014, 2015, 2018, and 2019 that we look at. And so 2016 and 2017 were omitted, firstly, because the flat prices that we observe in these years would likely see little change if we were on an hourly versus a sub-hourly settlement. And we also don't think that the market outcomes there are necessarily going to reflect future market conditions, and we'd want to be cautious about making any conclusions based on the results in those years. And so now that we've established the supply and demand curves, as well as the merit orders that we receive, the model can calculate a new price and quantity equilibrium in each interval, and then compare that sub-hourly equilibrium that's determined to the hourly equilibrium, and measure how the efficiency is changed between sub-hourly and hourly settlement. So here are the results of the model. Looking first at the table of 5-minute results, what will probably jump out first is that in the first few years here, we see relatively small negative numbers. And that may be surprising, and that was initially surprising to us as well. And so what that's indicating is that the efficiency in the market of moving from hourly to 5-minute settlement in those years, on average over the year, or in sum over the year, is actually slightly negative. And so I will talk more about that and why we would see a result like that. But we do see that in 2019, there's a more substantial increase in efficiency. That means that over the 4 years in aggregate, we actually do see a positive enhancement in efficiency in total of just under $3 million. I'll remind you again that these efficiency numbers we're looking at do correspond to the figure that we looked at earlier, being the area A and area B in that chart. And then when we look at 15-minute settlement, what we see is that the result is actually nearly as efficient as 5-minute settlement. So we see about $50,000 less over the entire period of enhancement in efficiency. But the biggest takeaway just comparing these two tables for us is that it looks like the marginal benefit or the enhancement in efficiency that we'd get by moving from 15-minute to 5-minute is extremely small and would almost certainly not justify the noticeable increase in implementation cost between 15-minute and 5-minute settlement. So on slide 36, a few sort of takeaways from those results. So again, to summarize, we saw a very small loss in efficiency in the years 2014, 2015, and 2018, and then a relatively larger gain in 2019. And so while we see that the summed impact in all those years was quite small, there are in all years, there were hours with both gains and losses. And it's then when we sum that impact over the year that we see that the summed result is relatively small. And so kind of a takeaway from that is that it may look like the needle is, there's a huge shift in 2019 compared to previous years, but really all years had both gains and losses. And it's just that when you sum those in the first 3 years, the gains and the losses were approximately equal and net out approximately. Whereas in 2019, the gains did outweigh the losses by about $3 million. And so I mentioned we talk about why we would even see a reduction in the first place. And so the reason that we would ever see a reduction is because of a more direct exposure to market power. And so previously I talked about how a merit order is not always going to be a true reflection of the underlying supply curve due to economic withholding. And so what that means is that at particular intervals, it's possible that the sub-hourly settlement equilibrium would actually be further away from the underlying supply and demand equilibrium compared to what the hourly settlement equilibrium would give us. So on slide 37, I have a figure that sort of outlines that impact that I'm talking about. And so here we can see a similar figure to what we saw before, but in this instance, we have a merit order included as well. And so at this moment in time, we can see our merit order includes some economic withholding, meaning that it results in higher prices compared to our supply curve. And if we look at the P60 and Q60 that are indicating our hourly settlement equilibrium, we can see that it wasn't quite at the perfectly efficient supply and demand equilibrium. And that, again, is just a result of hourly settlement. But then we can see that at this moment in time, based on demand and the merit order, if we were to settle based on the merit order and demand at this time, we would go to this sub-hourly price and sub-hourly quantity, but that actually moves us a little bit further away from our supply and demand equilibrium compared to where we were with the hourly equilibrium. And so what that means is that the areas A and B that we see in this figure that have the same meaning as they did previously are actually negative or a loss in efficiency compared to where we were with the hourly equilibrium. So I've pulled a sample of some of the results here in order to outline how market power impacts the efficiency of sub-hourly settlement. And when we saw that market power was creating this loss in efficiency, I think it would be natural to perhaps assume that if you reduced market power, that might mean that sub-hourly settlement was more efficient. And what we found is that that's actually not always the case, and that it's not as simple as just being able to say that if you got rid of market power, then sub-hourly settlement would then be more efficient. And so in the 2 hours we have here as an example, we can see this first hour, which would be hour ending 17 on March 20th of 2019. We can see that there was quite a substantial exercise of market power in this hour. It's also important to note that the fluctuation that we see in both of these hours was due to economic withholding and not due to a fluctuation of underlying marginal cost at the time. And so we can see the hourly pool price was approximately $760. And when we look at what the 15-minute pool price would be in this first hour, we see that for the first three 15-minute periods, it was still quite elevated around the $800 mark. And then it was substantially lower in the last 15-minute interval. And so moving from about $760 to $800, we really don't see a very substantial change in dispatch or in the behavior of price-responsive loads between those price points. But then when we go from $762 down to $125, we do recover a large amount of price-responsive load, 85 megawatts in this instance, between those price levels on average. And so what that means is that the change in efficiency of the market in these first three 15-minute intervals is quite small. We see a very small loss at first, and then nothing at all. And then in the last 15 minutes, because we recover that large chunk of price-responsive load, we do see a positive increase in efficiency. And so in this hour, overall, we see, relatively speaking, a large exercise of market power, but this hour in sum has a large enhancement in efficiency from sub-hourly settlement. Then when we look at the second hour, this would be hour ending 22 on December 13th, 2019, we can see that there was still market power being exercised here, but not as substantial. The hourly pool price was just under 300. And when we look at our 15-minute prices, we can see that the market power was particularly exercised in the second 15-minute period. Or because merit orders are static over the hour, demand reached the area of the merit order that had more economic withholding within it at that time. And so the first 15 minutes, the third and the fourth were all relatively lower prices compared to the pool price, but then the second interval had a much higher price. And so it means that in that second interval, we had a noticeable drop off in price responsive load of 50 megawatts, whereas in the other intervals, the change was relatively smaller. And so because we lost price responsive load due to that exercise of market power, we had a more substantial decrease in efficiency during that time, which means that overall for this hour, in sum, we saw a decrease in efficiency by going to sub-hourly settlement. And so there's a lot of information there, but the takeaway from the data on this slide is that if you add or remove market power, it doesn't necessarily mean that sub-hourly settlement becomes more or less efficient. While it is true that market power is the cause of seeing negative efficiency, it could be the case that adding market power could actually result in more efficiency, or taking it away could result in less efficiency. And so making some conclusions based on our result there, I'll just remind people, I'm sure many of you are familiar with the market power mitigation advice that we provided to the Minister of Energy, but we described that the Alberta energy market, as part of the framework for our energy market, we have a trade-off between static efficiency and dynamic efficiency, and that it's a necessary feature of our current framework. And so by allowing market power in our market, we do sacrifice a small amount of static efficiency, but we expect to see gains in dynamic efficiency as a result of that. And it looks like sub-hourly settlement appears to have a relatively negligible impact on static efficiency. So in some years, you may have a net gain, some years you may have a net loss, but it's never a particularly large impact. And so in order to really determine what the merits of sub-hourly settlement will be, we'll have to compare our implementation costs mostly against whatever we expect to see for gains in dynamic efficiency, and think if those gains in dynamic efficiency are likely to outweigh the implementation cost that is required for sub-hourly settlement. All right, so now I'm going to talk about some of the dynamic benefits. And as I mentioned at the beginning, these benefits, they really can't be quantified in the same way as static changes. And so there's some things that we've considered, some that have been brought up to us by stakeholders, but I'll just outline some of those quickly here. So on slide 41, again, kind of reiterating that we see reductions in static efficiency due to market power, but when we see market participants responding to high prices that are due to the exercise of market power, that really is how the Alberta market signals scarcity. We rely on market power during those times of scarcity in order to send those price signals. So it is still, I think, fair to say, even though the impact to static efficiency isn't substantial, that we would see higher price fidelity from sub-hourly settlement during these scarcity events. Or in other words, the market would more be able to signal scarcity of both supply as well as scarcity of ramping capability by allowing the market price to be settled on a shorter interval. And so we think that would provide greater opportunities to both generation and load that's flexible and that can ramp very quickly in order to capture those moments of opportunity. And so for generators, we think that because we currently have payments to suppliers on the margin, which top up generators if their offer was above the pool price, that's something that Tan is going to speak about later on when we discuss payments for load on the margin. But we believe that generators already have some of that incentive to invest in flexible and fast ramping generation, and that sub-hourly settlement could potentially enhance that signal for generators as well as provide that incentive for loads. Another consideration is that if we do see more flexible generation and more flexible load, that may increase the competitiveness to the market in that it enhances the ability for competitors to respond to an exercise of market power by another firm, as well as enhancing the ability for loads to respond to exercises of market power as well. And so we think overall that would likely increase competition. And so in the table below here, we've summarized the static inefficiencies that we believe existed in the market due to market power that we calculated as part of our market power mitigation advice. And so we think that if there was enhanced competitiveness in the market, and that disciplined the exercise of market power to some extent, then it may also mean that these static inefficiencies that we observe in this table could be reduced by some amount as well. But it's very difficult to estimate by what extent we think that these inefficiencies might be reduced. We believe they're already very small, and so it may be the case that to further reduce these inefficiencies would be quite challenging. But we see inefficiencies between the years 2013 and 18 that do vary from year to year, but are typically on the order of something like $30 million, $40 million a year. And so we could potentially, over time, with enhanced competition, see some reduction in those inefficiencies. And I will just quickly highlight that the static efficiencies that are measured here in this table are a little bit different from the allocative efficiency that we were estimating with sub-hourly settlement in the previous section. All right, so I think with that, we're open to take any questions on the static benefits or the dynamic benefits or any comments that anyone has.
Yeah, Jen, any questions from anybody on the call?
Nothing so far. So if you guys want to raise your hands, if there's any feedback, questions, comments, or feel free to type something in the Q&A, let us know. We do have one here. Sarenda, can you unmute?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Good morning, Sarenda.
Good morning. Thank you, all the folks at ISO. I am very exhausted to work. But the problem is that there are so many assumptions that this all the work is based on, right? And to me, it looked like both the cost and the benefit, they are could be plus minus, I don't know, a couple of 100% either way. I think this is a very, very initial the thing we do when you do a project. And then we say, because there are so many assumptions. But just the last slide that shown around 42, that the total inefficiencies from $30 to $40 million. And even though we have difficulty figuring out how much we can save, but since we have so many assumptions in this old calculation, I'm going to assume even if we can reduce by 50%, and this number could be way off, then we save $20 million in the neighborhood, $15, $20 million. And if the implementation cost is $30 to $40 million, then the payback is 2 years, which is very good. There are not very many projects in the industrial sector that payback is better than 2 years. So I still see, even though the numbers are kind of subjective, there is still a good case for ISO to proceed with sub-hourly settlement just based on the number you have presented.
Yeah, I think I'll just maybe quickly respond, and if anyone else wants to jump in, go ahead. The following section, I think we might take a quick break before we go there, but the following section will sort of summarize how we're comparing these benefits and these costs. But you're certainly right that there could be some reduction in these total inefficiencies due to market power that could, you know, stack up against the cost of implementation. But I think at this point, like you said, there's just a really substantial amount of uncertainty about that. And I'll highlight again that those inefficiencies that we see as the result of market power, what we found in our result is that those are all already very, very small. And we certainly are not suggesting that sub-hourly settlement would remove market power in the market. And in fact, we believe that the market depends on the exercise of market power in order to function properly. And so we certainly still would have market power. It's possible that over a long time, we might see some response. I'll also just highlight that the time frame for that response wouldn't necessarily be immediately with the implementation of sub-hourly settlement, but rather we would have sub-hourly settlement, and then we would need to wait in order for the market to respond with the investment in the types of loads and generators that may be more competitive, may be able to initiate a quicker, faster competitive response to some of these things. And so I do certainly agree with your comment, and I'll just highlight again that it could be really challenging to kind of estimate both the timing and the magnitude of any sort of benefits that we'd receive from a market power or competition standpoint.
So having said that, if the benefits are so hard to calculate as we're hearing, I wonder why this judgment or why this decision is being made mostly on the benefit, based on benefit, when they're so difficult to precisely calculate.
Yes, Rendra, so we think we have a pretty good estimate of what those static benefits would be, right? It's easy to go back in time and take a look at the what changes may have been able to be realized from the differences between the merit order and the supply curve. It really is those dynamic benefits, I think, that we're having a hard time estimating. And I'll back up just a little bit more. I think that the costs are probably relatively easier to calculate too than the dynamic benefits. We can do a survey, and while the cost estimates may be at a fairly high level, we believe that they're indicative of what the costs would be for all of the market participants to implement the change. And as Tan had mentioned, we do think that, you know, even if between the high and the low bands that we do have, we probably also think that they're somewhat underestimating the total costs for the industry, because we didn't get all responses from all industry participants. So while we do think that we've captured a good estimate of what the costs would be for kind of those that probably have the biggest costs associated with the change, the LSAs and the retailers and some of the load and generators, they're probably not, like, it's probably not a full cost estimate. And then when we try to, so we can say that maybe our costs are a little bit on the low side, and then the estimate of that dynamic benefit, like Brendan said, we do find it to be very hard to do. And we've spoken with other other people within kind of our agency peer group to talk about how we may be able to do this. And it does present a challenge for everybody to try to estimate what those dynamic benefits may be. So, well, there may be some. I don't know that we certainly don't think that they're probably in the 50% range, and even if they're in the 10% range, we're not sure if that would be a good estimate of what those benefits may be. And as Brendan did mention, that those benefits take time to realize too. It's not like they show up kind of the year after or even the second year after in kind of their full amounts after the change has been implemented. And well, we do know that the costs are incurred almost immediately with the change for the system, with the changes to the IT systems and the contractual changes that the retailers have talked about. So from a kind of a present value analysis standpoint, that when you've got the costs occurring in fairly large magnitude in a short amount of time, and then the benefits kind of slow to materialize over time, it doesn't really, we were having a hard time justifying the recommendation of proceeding with the initiative. But again, I'll get into more of that in some slides subsequent to our break.
Thank you.
Perfect, thank you, Murray. So I think that's it for raised hands right now. There's one more in the Q&A. I think it's just, I'll pop over there here. There's a question or a comment from Richard Penn. It is hard to believe that every other jurisdiction, including FERC in North America, have got the benefits wrong in sub-hourly settlement. Any comments for that?
So maybe a quick comment for me. I think, I don't think that our analysis does suggest that FERC jurisdictions got the benefits wrong. I think that those markets are very different to ours, and primarily the losses that we saw, as I mentioned, are the result of exposure to market power. And so if we'd had a framework that mimicked those of FERC jurisdictions, meaning that there was no market power whatsoever in our market and we relied on other mechanisms in order to recover fixed costs in our market, then perhaps if that was our market design, we wouldn't see these same efficiency losses as a result of sub-hourly settlement. But I don't think it's fair to necessarily just take changes to FERC jurisdictions and bolt them on in Alberta. I think it's important to look at how those changes might impact the market a little differently given sort of the unique circumstances that we have here.
Perfect, thanks, Brendan. I think that's it right now for raised hands and no other written Q&As.
So, Jen, I'm going to suggest we take our break now and break for probably 10 minutes. Come back at 10:40. So why don't we do that? We'll see everybody back here in 10 minutes at 10:40. Okay, everybody, welcome back. We'll get started here. Again, I'll... our agenda for the next hour, I'll do a review of the cost and the benefits. I'll look at those in aggregate. I'll review what our recommendation on this initiative would be. And then Tan's going to close out the session with some information around an approach for loads. We've called it payment for loads on the margin to kind of make it analogous to the payment for suppliers on the margin. The phrasing of that might not be the most appropriate at some point, and maybe that changes over time, but Tan will wrap up the session with kind of a review of that concept, and then we'll pause again at the end for questions. But thank you for your questions so far through the session. So I'm going to talk about the benefits again. This is all of the information that we've either presented in session one, session two, or earlier today. When we look at what we identify as the benefits of sub-hourly settlement by doing a review over the previous years. In session two, we talked about this kind of area C that Brendan was referring to today in the supply-demand charts. We have this area C of change, and those really reflect kind of that transfer of value. So when we did our presented information in session two, we showed that with sub-hourly settlement, over the previous 6 years that prices would probably increase slightly on average. That represents a transfer of value from loads to generators. the net effect of that is zero. Brendan had referred to that as the size of the pie. It's just really how the pie is being allocated. The other benefits that Brendan walked through today was this the change in the efficiency and the allocative efficiency, and there is both gains and some years losses, but generally gains that are attributed, or that would be attributed to generation. And there would be gains over time that would also be, that would accrue to load. Over the full time period, when we look at our overall gains from the sub-hourly settlement initiative, we believe that there was about $3 million worth of gains that would be, that would accrue to the market. Most of those occurring in 2019. But if we were to say that over the six-year period, if this is representative of market conditions over a number of years, you know, with the caveat that this time period, 2016, we did not calculate any gains in this time period, but again, we didn't really feel there would be any material efficiency benefits in that time period. Our $3 million over the previous 6 years would be about $500,000 a year in efficiency gains from settling on a 15-minute basis. This slide then talks about the combined costs and benefits. Tan went through, and for this slide, we're just looking at the low costs that Tan had reviewed earlier in the session. There are one-time costs of about $30 million. There would be ongoing costs associated with IT, storage costs, and other costs of about $6 million. We do think overall that the net benefit is would be a overall cost of the industry of about $36 to $37 million. $31 million of that being the one-time initial costs for system changes, and then on an ongoing basis, some loss associated with ongoing system requirements outpacing the efficiency gains that we've been able to estimate. And again, these are the static efficiency gains. We don't have the dynamic gains in here. We do have a very hard time of estimating what we think is a good number that we would be able to put in there to reflect in our analysis. But as I mentioned in response to one of the questions right before the break, is we do think that those dynamic gains take some time to be realized, some time measured more in years, and are achievable 2 or 3 or 4 years or more into the future, and would only represent some percentage of those losses that Brendan had talked about that we identified in our market power mitigation report. So, like, as I think we've said earlier in the session today, so we do think that the sub-hourly settlement initiative would incent flexibility and improve price fidelity. It does seem like the costs are quite a bit more than the benefits that we are able to identify. We do think it promotes improved competition. Like, some of the dynamic benefits that we would get is that it would improve competition and provide incentive for assets that can ramp quickly, or loads that can respond to the price changes quickly. Those would be able to be enjoyed over some amount of time. But as I've said, the cost associated with the sub-hourly settlement initiative would be, most of them would be incurred immediately, and some of those dynamic benefits would be enjoyed over the future. The other thing that we've noted as we've gone through and we've gathered our costs from the industry is that most of the costs do appear to be borne by, right now, customers or like market participants that really don't have the incentive or aren't able yet to participate in the market. So most of the costs are incurred by LSAs and by retailers, and their commercial or residential customers generally right now don't have the ability or the incentive to participate in those, in the changes to the market. However, that's where most of the costs would be incurred. So our recommendation was not to proceed with sub-hourly initiative at this time. Like, again, we do think that this is a superior market design compared to the hourly settlement interval that we currently have. does provide for better price fidelity. It provides the right signals to incent flexibility. It would reduce uplift payments in the form of the payment for suppliers on the margin. Although those are relatively minor in our overall cost, energy market costs, but it would reduce those to some extent. But as we've said, we do think that the costs really far outweigh the benefits right now. I think we do need to recognize that we are in a pretty difficult time for a large part of the industry, and additional costs are something that we just don't feel comfortable imposing on the market at this point in time. And as I mentioned on the previous slide, we don't think that the benefits are really aligned with the costs. Well, the costs really are attributed to the LSA customer base. That's those commercial and retail customers. The benefits really are for now mostly enjoyed by the larger industrial customers. So again, as I mentioned earlier in our presentation today, we think that to the extent that there were other initiatives that are other market changes that we would explore, that we would want to implement in the future, if we could align this change and moving to a sub-hourly settlement interval with some other market design changes, we think there could be IT system efficiency costs, and all of the costs associated with the change wouldn't need to be borne by this initiative. With that said, I want to be really clear that at the current time, we don't have any other initiatives identified that we would kind of combine this initiative with. I just want to make sure that people don't think that there is something kind of that we might have in the background that we're thinking about. We do not have that, but we think there could be some efficiencies to be gained if we were to align this initiative with some other future initiative at some point in the future. And then, maybe not exactly aligned with the comment, Duane, that you made earlier in the session, but we do think that it would be wise for market participants to start to plan ahead, right? We do think that the sub-hourly settlement initiative is a better market design than the sub-hourly settlement approach is a better market design than the current hourly settlement initiative. So with that said, that as people are going through and making changes to their IT systems from time to time, we do think that it would be wise for them to build their system so that they could easily transition from an hourly settlement interval to something that is shorter than an hourly settlement interval. Again, we don't have exactly a timeline when that might occur, but as you go through and you make from time to time enhancements or improvements in your systems that you use for settlement, or that you use for your price forecasting, or you use for kind of your pricing of market deals, it would make sense to enable that shorter settlement interval functionality into your tools. So with that said, we'll certainly take questions on this, but I think what we'll do next is we'll move it over to Tan. Tan can talk about the payment for suppliers on the margin idea. After she's done, we're happy to take questions on kind of any of this summary information that I've talked about, the payment for load on the margin information Tan has talked about, or anything else that you've got questions about that we've either presented today or in some of our previous sessions. We'll open it up for kind of a wide range of questions. But with that, I'll pass it over to Tan.
Okay, so I'm just going to be chatting about the payment for load on the margin. So thank you, Murray. So on slide 49, so we've heard from some participants that payment for load on the margin should be considered. So there were some pros and cons with that, so I'll just go through that. So from the pro perspective, we believe that there would be a dynamic benefit of sub-hourly settlement to be realized, but it would be with a much lower implementation cost if we went with payments for load on the margin. It would also incent load to bid into the market. Load would pay the energy price, which would be more reflective of price during consumption. And then it's also more fair, as it's somewhat equivalent to payment for suppliers on the margin. Another pro also is that it increases system controller certainty, as now we would have a demand curve and that could be used for dispatch and pricing. One of the cons, there were some identified. So one was it would increase uplift as this would represent an additional payment, out-of-market payment that's applied. It would also increase complexity. And then the last one was that some loads actually indicated that even if we put in payments for load on the margin, it wouldn't actually incent them to bid in because the compliance associated with bidding in and following dispatch would outweigh the benefits that they would receive. On slide 50 now. So we did look at two options. Option one, which was temporary calling loss opportunity approach, and this was proposed by a load customer. And then there's an option two, which we're calling the true up to bid approach. So both of these approaches would require a load to A, submit bids into the ISO, and then also to follow dispatch instructions by the ISO. The reason for this would be it would allow for more accurate bid volume determination, and also it would allow for the payments to actually be made so that you could actually look at what the consumptions would have been. So before I go into the two options in detail, I'm actually just going to give everybody a refresher on payments to supplier on the margin. So on slide 51, I have a chart, a little graph up of what it would represent, payments to supplier on the margin, what the current option is. And PSM is meant to keep the generator hold to the office and to incent generators to follow dispatch. So generators receive an uplift payment when the hourly pool price is below their offer price and they've been dispatched by the ISO. So as you can see in the graph down there, the offer price is that orange line around the $500 level. The pool price is that $267 blue solid line. And then the S&P is represented by the dashed line. As you see, when it goes up and it moves up at about that 40-minute mark past the offer price for the generator, and then the generator gets dispatched up and they would be producing, and what they produce is that gray area there. So, however, they would be paid the pool price in today's market. So what happens is that they would only get the $267. So then that's below what they actually wanted to be paid for producing that energy, which is at that $500 level. So we would actually top them up the difference between the 500 minus the 267, and that's the payment they would get represented by the red. So on slide 52, I just wanted to explain what option one is, which is the payment for lost opportunity from a load perspective. So from here, if load bids in, if the settled pool price is below the bid during the periods the load had curtailed consumption, the ISO would pay an uplift equal to the difference between the bid price and the hourly pool price. So in this case, the bid is the orange line again at $500. The pool price is at the $267 range, and the difference between the two would be the payment, and the volume would be the 50 megawatts that they have actually reduced. So then for this, we believe that it differs from payments for supplier on the margin, the option one that was proposed. Payment for supply on the margin, compensation is not for lost opportunity, but to keep the generator hold to their offers when they generate. So I'm going to, on the PSM on the left chart, as you can see, in that red chart, you do not receive payment for this payment. So basically, when S&P is low and they don't generate, and then S&P goes up and then they generate for the hour, what happens is that they get paid the pool price, but the difference between the pool price and the bid price, even though the pool price is higher than the bid price, the offer price, they actually don't get any, receive any payment because they haven't actually generated in that area. And so it's a lost opportunity for them to be producing, but you don't get paid for no generation, right? So that's how PSM works today. That's the equivalent of, on the right-hand chart, PLM, lost opportunity. So basically the equivalent is that if S&P was high at the $500 level and it's above the bid price of what you're willing to consume at $500, you are actually not dispatched on to consume. So only when it drops below, S&P drops below your bid price, do you get any dispatch to consume. And as you can see, that's the gray area there. So the difference between the orange area, the bid, and the pool price itself, you actually don't get to receive any payments for that because you actually weren't consuming at all. So, and then I wanted, back in slide 53, I just wanted to reiterate that the ISO is not contemplating any changes where it will compensate for lost opportunity for either load or supply. Okay, so then with that, we thought that how to make it PLM analogous to PSM. So that would be payments that would equal the difference between the pool price and bid price multiplied by the volume of energy consumed in the dispatch bid block. So this ensures that load does not pay any more than the bid price. So that's similar to what the payments for supplier in the margin would be, which they get up to their offer price, and here you get up down to your bid price. This also promotes consumption when prices are low and curtailments when prices are high. So I've provided two examples. The one on the left-hand side is with S&P increasing, and then the one on the right-hand side is with S&P decreasing. They're mirror images of each other, as you can see. So in this case, the S&P was low at the beginning of the arrow on the left-hand side. So you would have had a dispatch to consume. And then once the S&P rose above your bid, which is the orange line, then you would have had a dispatch to curtail your consumption. In this case, pool price would have settled at $267 due to the S&P, the average of the S&P there. So what happens is that as a load today, you would have to actually pay the $267 for the consumption that you've actually consumed in that portion of the hour. So the 50 megs for that 25 minutes or so. So we think that that's not fair because your bid was only up to that $100 where you were willing to consume, the orange line there. So what we're proposing is a refund to you of the difference between the $267 and the $100. And that's the payment that you would receive. And it's the same thing on the right-hand side, except for in this case, if the S&P is decreasing, so then it's the same idea. You would only pay up to your bid price instead of the pool price there. So with this, we thought that we should do some analysis to see what type of payments for load on the margin, what the magnitude of that would be. So with that, it resulted in approximately 50 to a little under $1 million in annual uplift payments for option two, as you can see it there in the table below. With this, what we assumed was that we assumed price responsive load would bid in, and then the price and volume was actually based on the load bid curve that Brendan provided earlier in the presentation. The PLM payout is very small compared to any of the energy payments, as you can see. So approach one and approach two, as you can see, both only netted about a 0.05% of the energy payments. So it's very, very small. So with that, we concluded that the further exploration of option two, true up to bid, may be warranted. We did see that there were some benefits to the market It did promote fairness, efficiency, and competition. So for fairness, participating load would not pay more than the bid price for energy. Participating load also would have dispatch requirements and payments that were analogous to the generator treatment. So that really promoted the fairness there. For efficiency, we believe that it provided the right settlement signal to incent load and flexible consumption. This was also the least cost option available, and which would enable flexible load to consume. And then as an interim solution, this approach could be applied to energy storage assets as the long-term integration is still being developed for them. So it would promote that efficiency there. And then the last one was competition. So now we would have a demand curve from load bids, and that would provide a better state price signal from both the market and also from the ISO system controller perspective. Okay, so we also wanted to look at the other side of it. So yes, it's wonderful and everything. And then these are some of the considerations that we would have to take into account. So we would A, have to determine the size of the potential participation. And we would like to gather more of your information and your input to see like how big how many participants would actually participate and how large of it of a market would it be from a PLM product perspective. There would definitely have to be rules that would have to be developed, new rules that would have to be developed, and there could be rule changes that would actually need to be also considered. So those rules would be similar to what you would see for payments to supplier on the margin. We would also have to understand how compliance would be measured for loads. It would be similar to what some generators have right now, but we understand that there could be some complexities and differences, and that would have to be accounted for. So there would be a must bid, must comply, but how would that actually apply to your loads? And then the last part that we would have to actually look at also is the payments, who's actually going to make those payments? So somebody gets the benefit, but somebody has to pay that cost. So who's going to be paying that cost? So that would have to actually be considered. And speaking about costs, we looked at it from an IT cost perspective, and we are expecting it to be small because we could utilize some of the processes already in place for the payments for supplier in the margin, tweak it a little bit so that it would be relevant to payments for load on the margin. So then that wouldn't be a full IT system change. However, we'll have to further explore that the further along we get. And we also would have to explore costs to the market too, like what other costs are associated with this PLM that we haven't considered. So the question I'm going to leave you with is, do you think there's value in exploring payment to load on the margin, given both the benefits and issues identified? I'm going to pass it on to Murray.
Great, thank you, Dan. Group. So we'll pause here for any questions you have, either related to the last material Dan presented, the conclusions I had presented, or anything else that you've heard through today. So Jen, if you want to open it up for any questions that there might be, that would be great.
Sounds good. No raised hands right now, but I believe we have a written Q&A from Larry Shaven at Coelectric. For the analysis in slide 55, what assumptions were used for the amount of load participating?
I can answer that. So the demand curve, if we did have payments for load on the margin and we saw load participate, we'd be able to construct a demand curve out of the bids that they submit to us. And so for the purposes of these calculations, we just used the same demand curve that was shown in that static efficiency analysis earlier. And so as Tan mentioned, some loads suggested that perhaps PLM wouldn't be enough to incentivize them to participate in the market. And so it's possible that while that demand curve includes the vast majority of responsive demand that we observe, perhaps only a portion of that would actually choose to participate, in which case we'd only see a smaller number compared to these costs that you see in this table. if a smaller number of participants were actually submitting bids.
Thanks, Brandon.
Okay. Oh, go ahead, Marie.
No, I was just going to say, if any other questions on that have been queued up, Jen?
No, nothing else in the Q&A and no raised. Sarendra here. Just one sec. Sarendra, if you can unmute.
All right. Can anybody hear me?
Yep.
Yeah.
No?
Oh, you went on.
Can anybody hear me?
Yes, now we can, yeah.
Okay, good. No, I think the sub-hourly will be much easier for the price response like us, and much easier without much of the other obligation. But PLM will be the next thing that we will definitely consider. And the one got my attention that, and we as ANC think it's a fairness issue, that the lower like us paying much higher price than the energy we consumed at. And for example, if the price increases second part of the hour, then we end up paying. So there's a fairness issue that we're paying more than what we consumed at the price. So if it's a fairness issue, which we think, and I used to acknowledge saying that it's fairness. So the question is, even if there is a one load participation on PLM, why wouldn't the ISO do it? Because it's just the add on the system you had for the generator. Why would you need a certain number of the load to participate in the program?
Yeah, I think we want to understand, Sarendra, how what the take up on this approach might be. And there is a fair bit of work that's required in establishing new rules and going through the consultation process for new rule development. But I do hear your concern about a fairness issue, and you know, we would certainly take that into consideration when we get the information around number of participants that would proceed. If you know, if there was no loads, for example, that were indicating they would want to participate, we probably wouldn't go forward with any rule development. But you know, we'll certainly take consideration. If there's, you know, even a small number of loads, we'll work with you to see how we should do the implementation.
Yeah, and Marie, just to follow up, not this one, but I remember Tan said that having the price response load, self-retailer, transmission connected, if they do sub-hourly settlement, if the ISO do for them, Tan mentioned the cost was very, very high. Would there be consideration that given the benefit to the price response load, some of the costs could be recovered from them? We will do our own assessment. Because the benefit to the price response load, the year you have chosen for your analysis, I mean, those are a very stable price here. I bet you if you have done this exercise for 2011 to 2013, when price was very volatile in hourly, you would see a much higher number for the dynamic benefit. So load like us will do our own assessment and see what is the benefit to us versus the cost. So would you consider that those costs sharing with the people like us, and then we say, okay, we can contribute some of that cost given the benefit to us?
I say, why don't we kind of, maybe we would, Sarendra, we should probably take that. We can answer that question maybe more offline on our one-on-one conversation, but you know, it sounds like something that maybe we should consider. You know, we'll kind of discuss with our IT group again what those kind of costs for the one, you know, for that type of a system implementation. Pan did mention earlier that the costs to kind of bifurcate the settlement system were pretty big, but you know, maybe if we can share that information with you and you can see if there's any benefit in doing that, I think we should maybe take with that one away and have some further discussion with you about it.
Thanks, Marie.
Thanks, Sarendra. So no other raised hands and no other questions at this time.
Okay, well, you know what, I'll do the wrap, and if anybody has questions after, you know, after, we can answer them as well. But so the next steps group really will be that we'll send out the stakeholder survey. In fact, I think, Jen, the questionnaire matrix has been posted on the website already, right under the initiatives of hourly settlement. Yeah, so I think we're asking for stakeholders to respond back to us October 7th, or is it 9th? Well, anyways, it's
7th.
October 7th. So if you have any comments related to the engagement that we've held for this initiative, the conclusions that we've reached, any thoughts around any of the analysis, whether you think it's been it's reflective of what the costs or the benefits would be, we'd be interested in hearing your thoughts on that. And there are questions to that extent in the matrix. So again, we thank you for your participation in the sessions here. We certainly thank the people we've had the one-on-one conversations with. It's helped us to kind of reach the decision that we've been able to reach with the best information that we were able to gather. So again, thank you for your questions. And before we do sign off, Jen, I'll maybe check one more time if anybody's queued up while I've been talking.
Nothing at this time. I was going to just send a reminder. We will be sharing a quick survey following the session. So if you guys want to take your, 2 minutes even just to share your thoughts on the session, that would be appreciated. But no other questions coming in right now, Murray.
Okay, great. Then why don't we wrap it? Thank you again, everybody, for your participation. It helps us reach the conclusions that we do and helps us do good work. So appreciate your help. Thanks.